Olá, bem-vindos à After Party, tudo aquilo que fica por dizer depois da nossa Watch Party semanal. Recordámos uma conversa com a realizadora Lina Soalem, de resto a conversa do episódio da semana passada, mas agora completamente sem dobragem, na linguagem original da conversa, em inglês, feita ao vivo no Porto Postdoc, que concluiu na semana passada. Fiquem com a conversa com a realizadora que esteve em foco no festival, sobre a sua carreira, os seus dois filmes muito pessoais e também sobre o seu legado, quer argelino, quer palestiniano. Uma conversa que recordamos agora.
So, Lina, let's start with your first film, There, Algeria. You did it because your grandparents from your father's side decided to separate after a very long marriage. But it also ends up becoming a story about their heritage, about their home country. When you started out, was that your intention from the start, or did you find that story as you were talking to them?
I think their Algeria was really a spontaneous gesture, although everything I tackle in the film are topics that I was thinking about since many, many years, but I didn't know I could tackle them through cinema, because at the time I was working at UNESCO after having studied history and political science. I was always interested in cinema, but I didn't really know how to make films, and I didn't think it was accessible to me. So I was mostly programming films and trying to defend filmmakers that I liked. And what happened is that I was also specialized in the history of Arab contemporary societies. So I studied a lot what is close to my family history, which is the colonization of Algeria by the French. And I studied, of course, Arab contemporary civilizations and different countries. And so all these topics were always important for me, but I didn't know I could talk about it through a personal film. And what happened is that the day that I learned that my Algerian grandparents were gonna divorce after 60 years of marriage at 80, more or less, I automatically thought that their separation was not only a personal, intimate separation. I felt that their separation was the consequence of all the separations they had lived. The first one being when they were obliged to leave Algeria to go to France to work for the French colonial empire. And so I automatically linked the personal history and the personal memory and the collective memory. But I didn't know if this was true. It was just a feeling, an instinct that I had. And it's only while filming them and while trying to make the film and tell their stories that everything got imbricated. But at first, it was just like a hypothesis.
Throughout the film, we see the differences between your grandmother and your grandfather. But they are both reluctant to talk about feelings, especially with you, I guess, or talking about the past, even though there are still very powerful moments where they actually do it, and they talk about some very painful memories with you. How did you approach making them face those moments again, and how did you convince them to talk with you about that?
The thing is, I didn't really ask them the question of, can I come and film? I remember I called my grandmother and I told her, I'm going to come spend time with you and I'm going to film you. She was so happy that I was going to spend time with her that she didn't really question what I was going to ask her. I think it, with or without the camera, it would be the same. And the thing is, like, the camera actually helped us sharing, because it was as if suddenly it was a prolongation of myself that allowed me to find the courage to ask questions that I didn't dare ask before. And for my grandparents, it's not that they didn't want to talk with me. It's just that when you have someone that never talked about their personal feelings or that spent their lives hiding to protect themselves from the pain of uprooting and exile and exploitation, they can't from a day to another share their experience.
They don't know how to.
They don't know how to, and they don't know how to formulate things. They didn't really have the luxury of time to reflect on what happened to them. So it takes a while. And so I had to go through this process of asking the same questions all the time. And it was easier for my grandmother because even though sometimes she would hide in her laughter.
Super shy.
She will always try to share. While my grandfather, it was more complicated because it's as if every word was a revelation. And it's someone that buried himself in silence to protect himself. And so it took a long time. And the thing is, my grandfather, I thought he would never speak. And I remember that sometimes I would ask him questions and for months he wouldn't answer. And then I would come one day and not ask anything and he would suddenly talk about the things that...
For how long did you take?
It took 3 years, more or less, to film them.
And do you ask the same question over and over?
Yeah, yeah. My grandfather, there is one sequence in the film where I show him photos of his parents because I didn't know anything about his mom and his dad and when they were born and what they were doing and how he felt about them. And I filmed this sequence 5 times. The first 4 times, over several months, he would look at the photos and turn his head and say, I don't remember. And then the second time he would say, oh, the past needs to stay in the past. And suddenly, one day he opened up. And what he told me was, for me, extremely impactful. And it's as if suddenly I had access to the young boy that he was. Because he shared with me the fact that the separation that he lived when he was 19 with his parents, when he had to leave Algeria to go work in France, was the most hurtful thing that he had ever experienced. And he says that at 88. So I realized that he has been carrying this pain for all these years and never shared it.
Yeah, it's one of the most impactful moments in the film, I think. When you see him being vulnerable under his image when he's not that, he doesn't like to show it.
Probably the first time in his life that he was so vulnerable, right? Yeah. 70 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. For me, it was as if I had access to something that was buried. And if I didn't make this film, I would have never known my grandfather because he passed when I was in post-production. And it was the last 3 years of his life during which I was able to access something. And I remember when the film was released, there's so many people that came to me saying that thanks to what he says and in the film, they finally understood something about their own father or grandfather that had the same exile experience, especially the North Africans and Algerians, because they all lived through that and many of them buried themselves in silence. So many children, grandchildren felt some kind of anger because they felt that they were hiding something from them when it's not a secret. It was really a pain that what they were hiding.
Did it feel like unlocking a part of yourself as well? Like,
I think it's more than a part of myself. It was important for me to understand what my father went through, also because I was born in France, so I needed to understand also the consequences of the French colonization on and how it has affected not only the story of our people, but also the intimate relations between us. Because of that story, I had a grandfather that never spoke to me. So, and it's not that he was particularly mean or particularly harsh. It's just that his temperament has been affected by the history. And so it allowed me to understand better my relationship with the country where I was born, which was France.
And we don't want to spoil too much about the film, but a key part of it is that your family never went back to Algeria and you had no memories of it yourself because you were born in France. So what was it like going there after everything, after knowing everything that you learned and being able to peer into your family's history? And also, bonus question, you didn't really delve into your trip to Algeria in the movie. Are you planning to do that in the future and going
You're
back
Algeria.
Afterwards?
The thing is, I went to Algeria the first time when I was studying history. So I had access to the country, not through my family, but through my studies. Mm-hmm. And I was going a lot while I was making the film. to do residencies, to pitch my project in festivals. But I never planned to film there because for me the film was really about exile and about the fact that Algeria has become inaccessible to my grandparents. And so I built my own relationship with the country that is through cinema. That is the way that I navigate in the world, is through cinema and through my work. So I'm not interested in making a film about my relationship to Algeria, because my relationship to Algeria exists through my family and my grandparents. So for me, there, Algeria is also my Algeria. But it's funny how I had to go to Algeria to realize that all the answers I was looking for were not there, but were with my silent grandparents. So it was kind of a tough back and forth. But now I go a lot, but for my work more than family.
You follow that up with your second film, where you're focused on your mother's side of things. Was it like immediately what you wanted to do after the first film? And what did you learn after you made the first one that allowed you to make the second film with more tools at your disposal as an artist?
The thing is, like, I felt that Algeria came as a very spontaneous gesture, and I never thought... I didn't even think I would make a second film while I was making the first one. It was impossible for me to think of something else, because every time, well, not every time, the two times I made a film, it was always from a vital need or an obligation. So it's not like I dream and fantasize about films and I have many projects and then I pick the one I want to do. It's like when I decide to start making a film, it's because I have no other choice in the way that I function. So there, Algeria was necessary because I felt that when my grandparents were separating, I had to understand what they went through. If not, I couldn't continue my own life. And their silence that always existed became, in that moment, unbearable for me. What happened with the second film is that while I was presenting their Algeria and making their Algeria and talking about it, a lot of people were asking me if I was gonna do the same in my Palestinian family, because I would always present my film as, when I was pitching their Algeria before it was finished, I would say that in my Palestinian family, our history survived thanks to the members of my family who kept on transmitting it, and thanks to words. While in my Algerian family, our history was in silence.
The exact opposite.
So I was comparing. So every time people would ask, oh, so will you do another film? And I would always say, no, because the Palestinian story is very different. It's much more difficult to tackle, not because it's more complex, but because it's more, first of all, my family is much bigger in Palestine. And also it's an ongoing story. It's not like the French colonization in Algeria that is finished officially.
It's not in the one is in the past, yeah. The other is in the present.
So for me, it was impossible to talk about it while it happened, because memory is the past. And but there's a force that obliged me to make this film, from also the way that people received their Algeria when it was screened. I was sure that their Algeria would be a film that would mainly be for the French and the Algerians, and I didn't expect it to have so much echo everywhere. It was screened like in Europe and in the US and the Arab world, because it's a film about exile and family, so it concerns a lot, but I didn't know it had this capacity. And I realized how much, when you dig into the most personal things, it becomes more and more universal. And so I thought that I had access to a Palestinian memory that only me had access to, through my family members. And so I couldn't not share it to the world, especially when we know how much Palestinians are dehumanized. And this was, of course, 2018 when I started doing Bye Bye Tiberias. So it's even worse today.
And when during the film, you also speak about the importance of continuing to share that history so it doesn't get lost.
Yeah.
And people don't forget those places and where they came from. And so your film is a helpful way of continuing to do that.
Yeah, for me, I think Bye Bye Tiberias came after their Algeria first of all, once I understood the power of films in conveying stories that are hidden even in ourselves, how through cinema you can make the invisible visible. And also, I felt like the fear of disappearing totally from the collective memory was very strong. And I knew that through a film, at least you give immortality to a memory or people. And we know how much this is true in the Palestinian context, because anytime you film in Palestine, you don't know afterwards if what you filmed will stay or not. So everything you film becomes an archives right away. And you never know if you're going to see the same places, if the people are going to be there yet still. So it becomes a duty as well to capture and to, once you have images, to share them.
But how do you balance the deeply personal stories with the wider collective memory of your people?
I think it's through my cinematic language, the way I construct the films. I work with an editor that I really love for that, because she's very focused in detail and she's very sensitive to detail. So every little thing tells us about something bigger. And it's also a matter of what we feel when we're seeing the images and editing and what we want to transmit. So I have very clear intentions. That is wanting to transmit the memory of individual people and show how the collective history affected their individuality. And then you see how it works or not in terms of sensations. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I would ask very personal questions, and when I listen to them, I don't feel like they tell us more than something too personal, so I don't use it. But when I feel that the personal will allow us to understand more the collective experience, then
it's
I would
like
keep
an
it.
Equilibrium.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's really a matter of knitting. Mm-hmm. You know, like you start with a very thin thing, and at the end you have a
big carpet.
Yeah, a big thing. So this is how we construct it.
And speaking of that, and the editing part of it, one of the best and most interesting parts about the film is how you stitch together archival footage, but also personal home videos. So is that also another way of showing, in, you know, with a visual language, that our personal past cannot be separated from our collective past?
I think it's... the personal videos are also something that are a big part of me deciding to make films. Because when my grandparents separated, and when I decided to make Their Algeria, my first reflex was to go watch all our home videos, as if also I went to these images to know more about the past and to fill the silence. And for the Palestinian side, these videos were the trace of a period that is behind, of places that we didn't have access to anymore and of people that have disappeared. So it's also a proof of existence. It's a proof of something that has been erased, a proof that we exist. So this is the for me, like, they're not only personal souvenirs of a happy family time. They tell us much more.
Mm-hmm. There's that, you said, proof that something existed or someone existed, especially in this fraught conflict where, you know, not to get too heavy, but someone may not exist in a couple months' time. So that is also a way to preserve that, well, like you said, proof. They were there, they had a life, they were a person, they had many facets. Is that something you also concern yourself with, you know, preserving that?
The thing is, like, more than they were there for me, it's just we want to exist. So it's driven by a necessity to exist in the public discourse. And that's why I make films, because if it was just to say they were there, I could write a book. I wanted us to be present, not as a defiance, but as a necessity, as something vital. You can't be a human being, a social being, if you're not recognized by others. And when others don't recognize you, you have no other choice than to construct your narrative yourself. So for me, it was, I was lucky to have these images. I was lucky to have access to filmmaking. So I needed to use them and put them in the film.
You spoke a bit ago about the similarities and also the differences between both sides of your family. During these two movies, making them, have you realized that you're also sort of the product of these two halves? Have you learned a lot about yourself while finding out about your family?
I didn't resolve my psychological problems.
So it was not therapy for you?
It was not therapy for me personally. It was therapy as a collective. Mm-hmm. It was important because it allowed each of us to find our place in our family, in our history, in our lineage, in society. So for me, it gave me a lot of strength and as a person existing in that world, as a woman existing, coming from Algerian and Palestinian descent, as a woman coming from a lineage of very strong women that have kept our memory alive and transmitted it. So it gave me a lot of strength, but it doesn't erase what the trauma, intergenerational trauma does, and the way that we behave and deal with things. Also, the thing is that when Bye Bye Tiberius was released, it was in September 2023 in Venice and Toronto. 1 month after its release, while I was touring with the film, October 7th happened. And so I was touring with the film in the middle of the genocide. So it couldn't be therapeutical when the reality was overpowering our biggest fears. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, the reality was just a repetition of what I was showing in the film end of 1948 or in the Nakba. So it was kind of a difficult, I don't know how to reflect on that. I just know that I thank destiny that I could have had this film at this moment so that we kept on having a voice at a moment when Palestinians were censored, and I was lucky to be part of those that have been able to keep on having a voice. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. And do you think that the fact, you know, this conflict has become much worse in the last 2 years, but it's a situation that has existed for almost 100 years. Do you think it's also important that there's a lot of movies now showing that this isn't a two-year thing? This is a long generational thing that has kept going on and on for so long.
Yeah, it's important to have movies also because no one believes. And it's not about belief, it's even denial. We are denied our history and the reality of our history. So first of all, like even the words that we use, it's not a conflict, it's colonization, it's not war, it's genocide, it's ethnic cleansing. This is all recognized today by all national, you know, NGOs, institutions, Amnesty, UN, etc. So even in the words, when people refuse to talk about this history officially, it's a form of denial. So there is like a geopolitical interest behind the erasure of these people, maybe because they hold a certain truth about things that people don't want to see.
Do you feel like looking at the home videos of you as a child, because you were also a character in your movies, how did you feel when you saw those videos again? Did you feel like you were also crystallizing a sort of like loss of innocence?
I think it's not really that, because I still, when I see the videos, I still see myself at 3 or 4, I see the happy child that was not conscious at all about all of this. But at the same time, what I look at when I look at these videos with an adult eye is the presence of women around and the strength of all these women, because it's only as an adult that I realized what they have been through and what they've been capable of doing, which is not only surviving to the Nakba in 1948, which is the biggest ethnic cleansing, and it's also allowing to transmit to their children values of love and innocence and childhood. And they allowed us to have a childhood. And this is, I think, a miracle, because when you go through things like this, the fact that they never transmitted hatred or revenge is miraculous. And the thing is, Palestinians, 99.9% are miraculous. 99.9% don't transmit revenge. And the thing is, people focus on 0.1%, which is unimaginable for us, because the reality that we know of Palestinians is so not what is represented. So it's more like, when I look at these images as an adult, I am disturbed to see the gap between what I know and what I see, and the representations that are made of us.
You on our podcast, we usually ask our guests to recommend something for other people to watch. But here in this in this festival, you were given free rein to choose a selection of films for the audience to watch. Why did you choose them? Was it exactly because of what you were saying right now?
So it's a mix of things. There are some feature documentaries. There is one fiction that was shot as a documentary. And there are shorts that are between video art, reconstitutions. They're all like the common point of all these films maybe are either wanting to keep a certain memory alive, either giving a voice to people that are marginalized or erased, with very different artistic approaches, because some films are made only of archives, some films are made with computer 3D animation, some films use fiction to show a realistic day-to-day life. So I think what was important for me is just to put a light on people that we're not used to see in cinema, but put a light also on filmmakers that use very hybrid and very original and authentic artistic language to do so, and that are very interesting creatively.
And I've talked about Palestinian voices and hearing the voices, especially considering the events of the past few years. How important is it, or in what ways is it important for Palestinian voices to be heard, not also to be heard, but to give in platforms like this festival and other opportunities to, you know, to be able to speak their truth?
I personally think that it's vital and the duty of everyone, and it's the responsibility of everyone, because Palestinians have tried everything to have their freedom and dignity every ways. It's not working because of Western powers. So I think everyone is responsible and has to give a voice to those that are erased.
Mm-hmm. Your films also talk about migration, leaving your home country, sometimes being forced to leave it, going to another place. These days, we live in a time where migrants are ostracized or villainized for political reasons. Do you also think film is a language to show that these are just people like us? Any person can go through this given any circumstance. It's important for film to create that universal message.
And also that history repeats itself.
Constantly.
Yeah, I think films also allow people to empathize with the experience, because of course, when you talk about people that have left their country and everything behind, if you haven't lived it, it's hard to imagine what it means. Mm-hmm. The thing is, when you show it, and when you show it through personal stories, everyone can relate, because exile can also be leaving the countryside to go to the city. Mm-hmm. And in Europe, a lot of people have this gap of generational gap between the grandparents that lived in the countryside, and then with the industrialization, people have started going to the cities, and it totally disrupted and disturbed the social order. And the thing is, there's many reflections on exile that have been developed in literature and philosophy, and now in films, that talks about the tragedy of exile, that is one of the most painful experiences for a human being, even when it's chosen. Because when you leave, even when you come back, you will never have the same place. And so when you're forced, it's even harder, harder. And it's a lot of sacrifice. And usually all the reality of the sacrifice is totally erased when we talk about a migrant or an exiled person. And we never talk about the why they had to leave or why they decided to leave. And we always show it as if it was a conscious choice. Choice of freedom.
Yeah, and if it is a choice, sometimes we say, well, it was your choice, you have to deal with it, and we don't understand. Some people need to actually go to some place that they don't want to.
Yeah, yeah, and also they food. Yeah, they contribute to the reality of these places. So if you value what they are and their history, it's a way to get closer to them as well. Mm-hmm. The thing is, I don't make films so that people like us. I just make films so that we can exist in our reality to fight against the stigma. Then if they want to keep on seeing us through their stigmatized bias, it's not my problem, because I'm not going to spend my life trying to justify that we are humans your that existence. Deserve
you don't
to be
do
respected
it for
as
them
such.
You do it for yourself,
yeah,
and your
for,
history
for me and other people that can relate and that don't have the privilege to make films, because it's also a privilege to take the time to, you know, over 3-4 years construct a film and then travel with it. And it's not something that is accessible to everyone.
We just a side note, we interviewed a few weeks ago Ruben Alves, which is a Portuguese director. And he did a very similar movie to yours. It's a fiction, but it was about the Portuguese experience as
as a migrant in France.
Yeah. During the same decade. And it's almost the same. So it's a little bit of a universal message that you're spreading. Just before we're going to talk about something else right away, but before that, I wanted to ask you something. How did your family react to your two movies?
I think if I made those films, it's because I knew that there was a lot of love in both my families, despite the difficult realities and stories. And so it was very overwhelming the way that both families really received the films with a lot of love and pride. My grandmother, for their Algeria, toured a lot with me, and she was...
Did she cry or did she laugh?
Everything at the same time. She was 84 when the film was released, and she was just so happy to experience the fact that her story is transmitted to the world and that people see her. And I think for any grandparents, it was kind of incredible for her to see that her granddaughter allowed her to do that and to have to access that. So this was very moving. For my father, for example, their Algeria allowed him to define himself with more pride. And for example, when we did a lot of interviews on TV in France, and he was talking about his Algerianness with much more pride, when for his generation, people used to hide that identity. So I was very moved to see that it gave him strength and trust. And as for my Palestinian family, when they saw the film, all my aunts, they were very moved that the memory of the women of our family was present and the memory of the Nakba. And they all participated in defending the film. They presented it in Palestine at a time when I couldn't go. So it was very moving as well.
So I'm going to spoil the conversation now. Just to finish things off, you announced last year that you're making your first fictional feature film. What's the status of that project? And also, what has it been for you to tackle fiction, but also keep inserting or talking about the themes you've been talking to throughout your career?
Well, fiction is hard.
It's a whole different beast.
It's a different thing. I think I needed to get away from the weight of reality and the tragic side of it and to have more freedom. So I decided that the way that I wanted to keep on exploring the themes that I've been exploring, which are the themes of being a family in exile
and home video.
Yes. And keeping memory alive, I wanted to do it through a fictional writing so that I could have more freedom. But of course, you're always caught up with the reality of history and the weight of history.
There's always your truth, right?
Yes. So. And there's a way that I have a process that requires me to stay very close to reality. And really master reality before taking some time away and some freedom. So for now, it's really in the early stages of writing. But because I'm gonna film in Spain, I've been many times in the city where I'm gonna film.
But can you tell us a little bit more of the story or no?
Yeah, it's a story of an Algerian family that moves to Alicante in Spain. Mm-hmm. Which is a city that has a lot of Algerian immigration recent. And so it's about how this family is trying to fit and give a new chance to their life and happiness. And it's not going to work out so well. So that's what I can say for now.
And like you said at the start, this was also an impulse for you to make this film happen. How did that happen for you? When did you feel the urge to make this one?
This was this came from destiny. I was showing Bye Bye Tiberias in Jordan last July, and it was the first time my family will see it after 9 months of touring because of October 7th, they haven't been able to travel. I haven't been able to go there, and so when we showed the film in Jordan, all my family came. So when my aunts saw Bye Bye Tiberias and were so moved, and they started doing the Q&As and I didn't have to talk anymore and they were doing everything, I felt like there was a circle that closed. And at the time, I had this idea in mind to make a film about an Algerian family moving to Spain, but without having visited the city yet. And so I have a good friend who is now my producer who was telling me, what are you going to do this summer? And I said, I think I'm going to go to Spain for a week or two to start like thinking of what I want to do next. And for me, it was really like a little idea, and it would take months and years. And he's like, okay, I want to produce you and I want to send you there. And so this is how it started. Someone that gave me the impulse.
And suddenly it was right now.
Suddenly I went and I did scouting, which was like 2 weeks after. And then I wrote, and then we were selected to pitch in Marrakesh Film Festival. And so it all started like this.
It was a little bit of destiny again.
Yeah.
So where is destiny taking you next?
Destiny now is not very clear. It's been hard to write with everything happening. It's hard to, that's why I said like the weight of reality has caught up with me, because at the time I was really convinced that taking the freedom to talk about something similar but in a different way would be very exciting. And it's very hard to be focused in creative writing when you see what's happening to your people and how the world is receiving it. And so for me, it's also a question of why I'm making films? What is my role? For who? So it has been hard to keep on that flame alive when I see how little concern there is for the Palestinian people. But of course, this is changing and shifting, and there's a lot of solidarity that I'm seeing. So I'm trying to stay focused on that so that I can keep on.
How do you maintain hope?
It's really a day-to-day. I don't have hope all the time.
How do you hang on to the positive things?
But I have to, because I'm part of the most privileged people. So I cannot abandon when I see how people in Gaza are holding on and how children keep on celebrating birthdays and celebrating going back to school, and mothers are keeping on celebrating despite having lost children and husbands, and how husbands are celebrating despite having lost their wives and children, and how journalists are keeping on working when all their colleagues have been killed and their families as well. So I can't think like, khalas, I don't have hope. It's impossible. It's my duty. It's just psychologically, it's tough, but it's so little difficulty compared to what they are going through. So I just don't, when it happens, I just stay focused. Yeah.
Also, you come from a very strong heritage of women.
Yeah, I can't give up. It's a shame on my my ancestors.
A conversa com Lina Soualem no Porto Postdoc, que também foi destaque do Watch Party da semana passada. Quinta-feira, mais um episódio para ouvirem, onde vamos falar da nova série da RTP Play, Porta Premium, com Sónia Bolacó e a realizadora Tota Alves. Uma conversa que vão poder ouvir em todas as plataformas habituais e também em rr.pt. Qualquer sugestão, mandem para o nosso e-mail watchparty@rr.pt. Vemo-nos na Watch Party desta semana. Até lá!